Good afternoon. And good afternoon. And good afternoon.
You're really good.
You know how many there are, of me there are. No, it was already, the show was already preloaded. Poor Christina can't shut us off, so she's flashing us the sorry sign. It's not her. They programmed in a show for this week, but we were here in real life. So real us is having a hard time overwhelming fake us. Bill, since you're live here today, what do you got for us?
Well, we have a sponsor. our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery. They're our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. So if you're looking for a new mower, a rider, a zero turn, whatever it is, go up and see them. If you're looking for a new tractor, implements, repairs on your tractor, give them a call. Their number is 530-226-9226, and they're located up on Twin View Boulevard, just south of Phil's Propeller, 3119 Twin View Boulevard, and they can take care of all your tractor needs up there. So either give them a call or catch them on the interweb at papemachinery.com.
Bill and his interweb.
I know you like that. That's why
I wasn't sure what that was.
It is. It's not a thing. It's Bill's okay. Bill's special fantasy. It's that right in there with children that look like large white cats. Yeah. There's something, some sort of a gear he's slipped. Bill's running in a parallel universe. It's all those shows about the unexplained that he watches.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. I'm just a contrary.
He's,
okay.
He's channeling William Shatner.
Well, that's what we're going to find out.
That's exactly how he does it. Good job, Bill, actually. Yeah. He's old. They might need a replacement.
Yeah, never know.
You got a future. So back to the serious topic at hand, actually. So our guest is Paul Skinner, and we are doing a third in a series here with the regarding the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. Mr. Skinner is on Team Adam, and we have done a focus on the exploitation of children. We've also done an overview of the National Center, and we did that in August, did another one in September. Here we are in October, following up with missing children. You hear about it all the time. You know, I mean, it's become kind of a thing. Like, remember when they first started putting kids on milk cartons? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, now they're... I mean, honestly, you couldn't find anybody who, if you said kid on a milk carton, everybody knows what that means. Everyone knows what that means. Do they even still do that, though?
No.
Nobody even has milk cartons anymore.
They don't have milk cartons.
Yeah, there's no milk cartons, right? They're all in those plastic jugs. Kind of screwed you guys over there for advertising.
They did.
Okay, so where do you want to go this hour? We had a five-minute break. I already forgot.
Oh, okay.
Short attention span theater, like, caught up with me.
What I'd like to do is make sure the listening audience understands that we take a look at missing children in four separate categories, and I want to talk about each category just briefly and talk about some risk factors that your listening audience should be aware of that may come up. The first one is endangered runaways. At NCMEC, we believe that every runaway is endangered because they have the potential to be exposed to so many things while they're on the run. These are usually children that are under 18 that are missing on their own accord, and their whereabouts are unknown. They're usually on their own or with a group or coupled up. And this is an interesting phenomenon because we're seeing a drop in coupled up folks running away together, the Romeo and Juliet syndrome, we call it. We have seen one of those cases in the North State in the last 6 months. So that's kind of an interesting note, because if they were to had taken statistics back in 1800s when I was a teenager, there would have been a lot of coupled up Romeo and Juliet type situations where people had just ran away because they wanted to be with each other for the rest of their life. But the risk factors are important, and they pop up usually as physical or sexual abuse in the home, or the possibility of physical or sexual abuse while they're on the run, while they're out. Sometimes there's family conflict that creates this issue. Sometimes they're struggling with mental health issues. Substance abuse comes into play. And here's the big one for us at NCMEC is pregnancy. When a pregnancy is involved, oftentimes there is usually an endangered runaway situation that will pop up for us. Online enticement is another issue where we're seeing a lot of growth as far as kids running away from home in order to be with X person who they just met online. Gang activity is another reason that kids are leaving their home. And social rejection and bullying right now is another growing area where kids are leaving home. Either they're dared to, or they feel like they have no choice but to leave the home environment because they brought so much shame on the home. 77% of those reported to NCMEC are between the ages of 15 and 17. Mm. So the majority of these children that are leaving are right around the driving age, but for some reason are not driving. And Bill, you and I had talked about this a couple months ago. When we were 16, there was nothing that was going to stand in the way of us getting our driver's license. Mm-hmm. We're seeing that that's not necessarily the case.
They don't do that now.
No, it's not necessarily the case right now.
That's really weird.
And oftentimes these kids go missing just because they want to get out or they want to do something different. They're not licensed drivers and they don't have cars.
What percentage of the missing kids are kids in that age bracket? I realize that's like a question within a riddle, but I mean, when you think of, like when most of us think of missing children, we think of little kids.
We do.
We think of little kids getting snatched from the shopping mall.
And that's, or and that's 1%.
Playground or whatever.
That's 1% of all the missing kids.
It's 1%.
It's only 1%. It is. But it's something that catches our eye quickly. It's something that law enforcement responds to quickly and in abundance. And it's something we should, as a society, respond to quickly. But we still have these children that are decided on their own to leave home, leave the home environment, leave the protection of the home, and making them susceptible to other issues. It's like that poster or that the missing child, missing adult flyer I was showing you before the show, where she's 23 years old, but she has some challenges, and so she operates on an 8-year-old level. So is she susceptible to
everything?
Everything.
Yes.
Yeah, she is. Yeah. And so
everything bad.
That's a huge issue. The other category that we focus on at Team Adam is long-term missing cases. And those are those cases where the viable leads have been thoroughly investigated, but the child has not been recovered. These cases are extremely frustrating to law enforcement. I spent considerable time up in Klamath Falls last year dealing with several cases where once we reviewed the case and read all the police reports and all the leads that came in on that case, it was clear who the suspect was. But the suspect and the victim were never connected in any way. So it didn't get us over that nobody homicide hump that we needed. And so children that are reported to NCMEC are usually recovered after a brief period of time. I don't know if you remember as a child if you ever ran away, but my son ran away and he ran out to the camper out in the driveway and hid underneath the camper for a while until my wife told him she was fixing something for dinner that was his favorite. And then he forgave us and decided not to run away. And he came back in with his Tonka truck and all was forgiven.
That was the end of that.
Yeah, that was the end of
that. Didn't you run away and then
you weren't
allowed to cross the street?
Yeah, I got to the corner and it was like, I'm boxed in here. I can't cross the street. I had to go home.
Yeah. Living on the wild side.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Feels dangerous.
Good little rule follower.
So on those long-term cases, we invite law enforcement to call us and ask us to come in and do a third-party review of not only the case, the information presented in the case, but also to see where that case stands as far as today's technology goes. A lot of these cases, I reviewed one last year that was done in carbon with carbon paper. Typed on a typewriter. IBM Selectric.
Oh, old enough to...
With carbon paper.
What am I saying? I used to use carbon paper. Old enough.
Yeah. And, of course, now we have a different technology today, and we offer them the use of technology to scan that information and to put it into programs like Adobe Publisher and those types of programs that, that will bring everything back up to today's standard. Now, at some point, if this case goes continues the way it is and no new information is provided or new information comes in and dribs and drabbles, we're going to have to revisit that same case again and take a look at it from a technology standpoint. So technology is one of the things we look at. The other thing we look at is the evidence that was taken. We've been to some organizations where one piece of evidence was taken. We've been to others where they have an entire dedicated room locked up, has been locked up for 15 years, that has everything that that child ever had in its room, in that room, which is fabulous for us because we can look at that and say we need to take a look at touch DNA. We also do age progression. So when we have usually about anniversary dates of the abduction or the missing, NetMec will do computer-enhanced age progression. And usually on the anniversary date, we'll do something as far as press goes, a media release, or we've been using Facebook a lot. And so you'll see pushes, we call them pushes from NetMec, saying, this is so-and-so, she disappeared on this date, this time, this is what she looks like now as a 27-year-old or a 32-year-old person. Some of those have really worked out well, but the success rate is below 10% on those. But it's still something we've got to do because we know that everything changes with time. In fact, right. We were talking about that at break. We know that everything changes at time. With time and with the equipment that we have that local law enforcement doesn't have, we can actually progress that person through the different ages and then produce that. The third area is family abductions, and this is by far the biggest one in the U.S. because relationships change. People like, people don't like, people are mad, people hate, people love. You have that whole human dynamic that goes back and forth, back and forth. And unfortunately, children are used sometimes as leverage against the other person, or they're used as a bargaining tool for the other person. Oftentimes, the child is actually just flat abducted. So,
what's the percentage of child abductions that are family members?
You know, I would have to say probably right around 60%.
Wow.
Yeah, it's very really, really high.
That's why they always look at family members first.
Yeah.
And so there's risk factors involved there, and among those is that if the parent or the other family member has previously abducted or threatened to abduct the child, that's a huge risk factor that we look at. Mm-hmm. Whether there's been a history of mental instability or a lack of cooperation or even violence in the past, we take a look at their criminal history. I'm talking about law enforcement, not NetMec, because NetMec doesn't have access to criminal history stuff. But law enforcement takes a look at criminal history. We take a look at through open sources as to where their strongest connection is. Is their strongest connection with whatever country they came from, fill in the blank, or whatever state they came from, fill in the blank, or whatever region, fill in the blank. Because that's a good indicator that they don't plan on staying within the jurisdiction of the court, even if they have the child.
Right.
No job, but or the ability to work anywhere they choose. So they have a tangible talent that will employ them. If they're financially independent or supplemented by somebody else, and who is that provider? If they're engaged in planning activities such as quitting a job, selling a house, changing work, or closing accounts. If they're hiding or destroying documents, applying for travel documents, or if they're asking the spouse or the other parent for copies of birth certificates and or school records.
huge red flag.
Huge risk indicators. Huge.
Yeah.
So there's some preventative steps that can be taken by folks that are involved in this type of situation or may think they might get involved in it. The first one is make sure you got that custody order. That custody order is so, so important from the court. There were so many times I would get a call like this, and I would ask, can I see your custody order? And the answer would be, we didn't think we needed one because we were getting along. Obviously not.
Right.
Obviously not. He's taken your child. During that process, request that the judge include abduction prevention measures in the court order so that the parent or the family member is advised in advance. This is what we're looking at, and you're not going to be doing the following things. One other step that you can do for preventative issues is to surrender the child's passport to the court itself. Walk in and hand the judge the child's passport. And that will keep the child from traveling. And that passport gets turned over to the State Department. State Department issues a no-travel order for that particular person. So if they're at an airport and they try to get through without passport, father identifies the child as so-and-so, they'll actually run that name. The name will come up as no-travel.
Is there an age limit on passports?
Just wondering that.
I don't know.
You know, I've never heard of that, but somebody walks into an airport with a small child, and I would imagine most people assume it's their kid. Do they ask for some kind of photo identification or a passport?
You'd have to.
I would assume so.
Otherwise, we'd have kids. Yeah.
But Bill, my passport says Hawaii, Alaska, and Berkeley on it. It doesn't.
Yeah.
I don't go anywhere like that.
Right.
So I haven't experienced that. So I would assume that they would check for that kind of thing.
Well, I know that kids' passports are a shorter renewal term, obviously, because their features change so often.
Hmm.
So I think it's a 5-year.
Okay.
But I don't know when the 5-year deal begins. But like babies, right? They're going to take a baby out of the country. I hate to say this, but babies kind of look like babies.
Yeah,
I mean, I guess if they're your baby, they look different. But
this is another one of those moments where I wish my wife was here because she remembers the length of all these.
Oh, look it up.
All these passport things.
But that's kind of interesting. That turning that in though, that's a good precautionary thing.
Yeah,
actually, that's smart.
One really important special note here is that a custody order is not required to report a child missing or a child abducted.
Wait, say that again?
A custody order is not required to report a child missing or abducted. This is another one of those wives' tales that somehow circulated throughout communities. And you still have a right to report any child or any person missing to law enforcement, and law enforcement still has an obligation to take that report. But there actually have been attorneys that have told their clients, you don't have a court order, so you have no right to report your child as a missing person.
Oh, wow.
And you do have that right. It's your child.
And the 24-hour thing, that's not a thing anymore, is it?
No. No, it's not. In fact, it's so broad right now that we were prepared at that event at Sacramento to, if somebody were to come in and say, I need to report and walk up to a Sacramento PD investigator and say, I need to report my child missing from Los Banos, he would have taken the report. They were prepared to take the report.
Mm-hmm.
Now, once that report's taken, there would be a discussion between Los Banos Police Department, Sacramento Police Department. That's who's going to take the lead on this and who's going to still stay attached to it or not. You know, they may just turn the whole case over to, and in this case I use Los Banos, may just turn it over to Los Banos.
Mm-hmm.
The last area where our children are categorized in is infant abduction. And this one is the one that just, it's tough to figure out. And at the same time, it's concerning because it actually identifies the profile of the usual suspect. And so infant abductions are any abduction of a child under the year of one year of age. And it varies from a non-custodial parent who may be doing the abduction to a stranger. However, when we did an analysis of 337 cases, we found that the suspect was usually female of childbearing age who appeared to be pregnant. Most likely compulsive and relied on manipulation, lying, and deception. I should tell you at this point that in talking with one of the investigators from the police department, I ran these by him one day, and he said, holy smoke, you just gave me a Reader's Digest on what direction to go looking for the suspect. And I said, yeah, it's not hocus pocus. It's based on previous cases. You're not profiling. Mm-hmm. You're basing it on previous information that's been vetted. The suspect usually frequently indicates that she's lost a baby or unable to have babies. Most often she's married or cohabitating. She usually lives within the community. Again, that narrows your focus.
Yeah.
Because you've got the whole world initially as a potential suspect, and now you have somebody in the community. There's usually a history, if you go backwards, that that person's been in the nursery or been in the maternity ward in the past. And so that's why a lot of hospitals consider nursery and maternity ward as security areas now, which is great.
Well, there are like tons of – I mean, I think we've all seen movies and TV shows about that. That happens a lot.
It does.
We've got to take a swift break that I'm not so swift about, like 5 minutes over. I'm really kind of traveling in my own time right here today. And by the way, the State Department actually has a pretty extensive thing on there about how to prevent your children from being taken out of the country. They've got quite a bit of information on there. So this isn't secret. You know, it isn't being held as a secret. And they do say turn the passport in. So at least everybody's singing off the same song sheet, which is nice. Mm-hmm. So anyway, you can find commercial-free recording of these programs after the fact at
WeThePeopleRadio.us.
This silence was brought to you by all the people who feel like there's too much sound in the world.
Yeah. I don't want to wait anymore. I just don't think I have the strength to carry on. Oh, I don't want to wait anymore. I waited so long, forgot what I'm waiting for.
This is Officer Joe with your marijuana safety message. Did you know the non-native noxious weed we call marijuana is a thirsty plant? It uses up to 5 gallons of water a day in our climate. Most marijuana in California is chemically laden with pesticides, herbicides, miticides, growth hormones, and even adhesives like methacrylate used to boost pollen capture. Methacrylate? What the heck? Superglue? All this goes into the human body from unknowing users looking to get high. I call them the walking as yet undead. Remember, let's be safe out there.
We all have a face that we hide away forever, and we take them out and show ourselves when everyone has gone. Some are satin, some are steel, some are silk and some are leather. They're the faces of a stranger, but we love to try them on.
Couldn't resist. Lots of stranger danger out there, right?
You're amazing. I thought I did a lot of show prep. You got it down.
I didn't. I'm kind of winging it, but I like to wing it because it inspires me.
I understand.
So we were talking. You had a couple more things on infant abduction or infant.
Yeah, that's just.
I did. There's one more comment.
Thing to do.
One of the really interesting things that I find in this is that during our study, we found that the suspect spends considerable time planning the abduction,
mm-hmm.
but has no interest in a particular infant. So it's the first infant available, and then she leaves.
Wow.
So I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah,
so on
yeah.
one hand, you have all this preparation work and this pre-planning, pre-visit, maybe a couple dry runs with no idea, no concept of which infant she wants. She just wants an infant because she either has to confirm her story that she's told everybody
mm-hmm.
or she wants that infant to actually raise and nurture and that
right,
type of thing.
Right.
So let's talk about reporting a child missing.
Yes.
Shall we? Okay. The myths are you have to wait a certain amount of time to report a child missing. That's myth number one. No.
Was that ever a thing?
It was.
Yeah.
It used to be a thing, right?
It'd be 24 hours.
It was a thing, and it was because of the proliferation of the runaways.
Kid under the camper.
Yeah. I'm leaving,
you
know, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
It was. And it was completely, completely inappropriate. And yet some organizations kind of followed that rule. And even with adults, they would say 48 hours, 7 days, 12 days, 24 days. We need a month. People have a right to go missing. That's true. People have a right to drop out and say, you know, mm-hmm. I've had it with you guys. But with a child, And with a missing persons case, law enforcement will take the report no matter what. But time is our enemy with these types of cases.
Sure.
It's not uncommon for law enforcement to get a call of a missing child 48 hours after the child was last seen. And the reason for this is because you've lost the nucleus of the family. And so the child may be at auntie's house sometimes, may be at mom and dad's house, or maybe at dad's house sometimes, and people think the child is either at school.
And they're just not paying attention.
Or at the boys and girls club. You know, they're just not paying attention.
Is this runaway kids, kids who got snatched?
Both.
Is this a kind of all of it?
Yeah, all the above.
Because if they can runaway kids, you know, a good ploy would be, I'm at my friend's house, and then by the time you come back from the, quote, sleepover, wait, kid never came for the sleepover.
You know, I'm concerned about you. You've used that excuse, haven't you?
I've been watching some, you know, criminal shows here.
Oh, I see. Okay. But you would have never done that as a teenager.
Actually, I never would have.
Okay.
I would have come up with a much better story.
That was the alien thing.
For God's sake, our people are Irish. We've been coming up with stories for centuries. That's how we survived.
I think the other thing, too, that people need to realize is when law enforcement's called and a child is reported as missing, that investigation starts immediately. That dispatcher, that man or woman that you're talking to on the phone, is trained to elicit from you certain information. And at any point during that conversation, that dispatcher goes, ooh, the hair on my neck just
Spidey
came
sense.
Up.
Yeah.
Yeah, where the parent or somebody's referring to that child as has been or in the past, those types of things. That information is conveyed to law enforcement that's responding. It's also conveyed to the investigators. So these dispatchers are really talented at taking these critical calls and getting that information. There's going to be a lot of questions asked of the parent or whoever is reporting it, and you can expect a law enforcement contact. There is no such thing as calling the police and saying, I want to report my child missing, but there's no reason to come out here. We're good.
Yeah,
right. We're going to be
like
out there.
Calling 911 and hanging up.
We're not just going to be out there with one person. We're going to be out there with many people because you just pulled the red handle. We call it the red handle in law enforcement, and that's in private sector, we call it hitting the panic button, but the red handle just got pulled, and the person calling just pulled the handle for us. At some point, there's going to be an operation that's going to take place either at the house or in the neighborhood. So can expect heavy law enforcement presence, especially if it's a child. And you can also expect in this community, in the North State, you can also expect air support. We'll be responding to that type of call looking for a lost and or abducted child. And that's not going to be a quick event. It's not going to be a 5-minute, 10-minute, 30-minute, 1-hour event. It's going to be a multi-hour event that's going to require several searches of a lot of areas. And these are called hasty searches, meaning they're going to go fast and furious, and they're going to go from lot to lot to lot. And the thought process behind this is we have to find this child. We know we're up against the clock here. We also know that those people that abduct child, remember that's 1%, within 24 hours usually kill the child. So
they usually do what?
Usually kill the child. So that means when I say hasty, I'm serious. It's going to be a lot of moving parts all at once. It's not uncommon in these situations to have a command post set up in the middle of the street. I was part of that a lot in the Bay Area when we've had a proliferation of young girls that have been kidnapped and never been found. And we had to set up command posts in residential neighborhoods. And unfortunately, we actually had to set up video teams to videotape those people who were watching the cops do their thing.
Oh, yeah, because they say that all the time.
And
it's like fire people
absolutely.
Do that, too.
Yeah, our suspect was in the group.
Wow.
Does that happen often?
I mean, it does.
It's got to happen often enough that
it does.
I mean, the public knows about it.
As long as he's not with the victim any longer, yes, it does. Happens a lot because curiosity, they want to see what they've created.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens in a law enforcement response? Well, obviously there's initial contact we've talked about. We talked about the aerial search or area search, but additional resources are being called in. And so to give you an example, I was part of you may have seen the thing last year, a Rodney case out of South Lake Tahoe. And when I walked into the command post, Civil Air Patrol was present, California Highway Patrol was present, Placer County Sheriff's Department was there, Nevada County Sheriff's Department was there. FBI CART team was there. We were there. Air Force Search and Rescue was there. and the Marine Patrol divisions of five sheriff's departments were there.
Wow.
Now, that, was that the gal that got abducted by a boyfriend or something from a campsite?
No. Okay. This is kind of. I mean, she was at a campsite. She was at a party with a whole bunch of friends.
Okay.
She called her parents and said, I'll be home. And the travel time was going to be 15 minutes. She didn't get home. And they actually found her in her car in the bottom of that lake. But to give you an idea, I mean, this thing's going to go from zero to massive in just a few moments.
Yeah, 911, what's your issue? And then
especially
a list like that gets assembled.
Yeah, especially when the red handle gets pulled. Especially when something pops up that law enforcement, either a patrol level or investigative level, says, mm-mm.
Has that always been the case? I mean, on a missing person, have they always responded that way?
It has, if something came up, you know, if something popped up. Now, what could happen? Let's talk about the red flags. The first one we talked about briefly is a delay in reporting.
Yeah, somebody disappeared a week ago. Yeah.
Exactly.
They're like, okay, you did it.
It makes it, you know, your common sense.
I'd be a terrible dispatcher. All right, you did it. Stay where you are. We're coming to get you.
I can hear Aaron now say, if you'd like to confess, I'm taking confessions now.
Go ahead and tell me. We're going to find out.
Yeah.
Don't you watch TV?
Bless you, my son. I know you've sinned. Counter reports of missing persons creates a red flag. Not so much because the people came to the police department, but you want to find out why they came to the police department. Did they come to the police department because they don't want you seeing the scene?
Oh,
at the house.
Don't come and visit me at my house where I killed the person
exactly.
Or I'm holding them hostage. Yeah.
Exactly. Oh, and so what's the motivation behind there? So that's one of those – another issue where the red handle gets grabbed, maybe not pulled all the way, but close. You know, we've got to take a good look at why they're saying what they're saying.
So they don't call in. They show up. You're talking about show up.
Show up.
Yeah. All right.
Where they call and say, you don't need to respond here. I just want to give you the information on my child. She's missing.
They're not going to do anything.
Please don't come
don't
over.
Don't do anything about
yeah,
it.
Please
don't come over.
Yeah, please don't look around here. Don't worry about the hair that's on the front porch. It's not a big deal.
Yeah.
One of the first things the dispatcher is going to be doing is they're taking that information, because if you can imagine what an octopus looks like, only
more octopusy?
Only human.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
They are doing multiple tasks all the time. And so as that caller is calling, that dispatcher is doing a history check on that house to find out how many times they've been there, what types of calls they've been on, those types of things. And that information is getting sent out to
–
All while the person's on the phone.
Sure, wow. Sure. They we've had lots of domestic violence calls.
Absolutely.
We've had – yeah.
Yeah, these people do not get paid. They love to be heard, not seen.
Mm-hmm.
But,
sure.
But they do not get paid for – the value that they have, because they can set the tone of investigation very, very quickly.
I was just going to say that those types of moves would basically tell law enforcement how quickly they're going to respond.
Well, absolutely. We've all heard those 911 calls where you're like, wait, why didn't you ask him this? Or the one where you go, ooh, smooth move. You know,
yeah.
they get all real nice with them, and then they keep them on there. You're like, oh, you are a pro.
Well, I remember when 911 first came out, and it was all new for everybody. And I remember hearing one of our dispatchers one time, a lady called up on 911. And the dispatcher says, 911 emergency, can I help you? And she goes, oh, I must have misdialed. Dispatcher said, okay, if you did, give me a number between 4 and 6. And the lady said, 7. Hang up the phone. Caller hangs up the phone. Dispatcher turns over, hits the hot tone, says, respond to an unknown disturbance at this address. And sure enough, he had a gun to her head.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty smart. That's super smart.
I love dispatchers. They're
amazing.
Yeah,
that's a – gosh, we should find a dispatcher and have them come in and tell us stuff.
That
would be super interesting.
They are phenomenal.
I'm getting a good idea here.
There you go.
All right, we have to take a really quick break again. Sorry.
No problem.
I'm like throwing it to Christina all the time. We keep changing our time up. Sorry. So in real life, you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. Nice job, Bill.
And more?
And more.
Okay.
Not more, really. Less.
Didn't matter to me. I got lost walking in the valley where it could have been 1993 when it goes badly after burning.
shine so bright. Trying to make sense of a hopeless situation feels like dying in the middle of the night. When it goes badly, you're alone in the darkness. Nothing's ever ever make it right.
This is Navy carrier pilot call sign 6 with a message to veterans. Local marijuana hucksters are offering free samples to veterans claiming that marijuana helps PTSD. These claims are not supported by legitimate medical studies, the VA or the FDA. Will you join me to protect our youth and our country from psychosis-inducing high-potency THC use? For the truth, please visit the International Academy on the Science and Impact of Cannabis at www.indiaalphasierraindiacharlie1.org. Thank you.
So good, but you will come to a place where the only thing you feel are loaded guns in your face, and you'll have to deal with pressure.
Yes. The Dispatcher's theme song, Pressure.
Yes.
All right, so you have a snazzy list you're going to click through with us.
I do. We were talking about some red flags on missing persons cases that would cause law enforcement to really up their game, especially in calling in additional resources. If there's some confusion as to who the reporting person is, when they are confused about what their relationship is with the missing person.
Is that a thing?
Yes, where they'll say, I'm the auntie. And as soon as they put the T on the end of it, it's like, are you the aunt? Are you the biological aunt? Well, not really, but kind of. She's living with me because, you know, things weren't good at her home. That's going to cause some problems, especially at the initial part of the investigation, to find out who's who and who's really who and where's the child supposed to be. Things that are left behind that shouldn't be left behind.
Phone?
Pets? For a phone, a pet, medications.
Oh, yeah,
if something changes quickly, if the person is involved in some social grouping, whether it's a religious grouping or a social club, and they're heavily, heavily involved in it, all of a sudden they stop instantly.
Oh.
And that stoppage is 1 month before the person's reported missing. There's a problem, and we need to resolve that problem before somebody in that team needs to resolve that problem. Now, I will tell you this, that one of the first things that's done, and there's a lot of technical terms to it, and mostly what the investigators call is just called pattern of life. Is a pattern of life is established about that person, and it comes under the thought process that no person simply exists. We all need other people in our lives. We all need other things in our life to live, love, and prosper. Well, that sounds almost like a Star Wars thing, doesn't it?
Yeah. No, that's Spock.
Doing the hand,
oh, Spock, okay, yeah.
Yeah, I'm doing the hand
live
signal
long
there.
And prosper.
Yeah.
And so as simple as it sounds, usually what you'll see in a detective bureau when they have one of these kind of cases, you'll see a graph. It's usually made on a whiteboard because it's got 1,000 things written on it. In the middle will be the victim. And on the outshoots of that will be, what are those things that supports this lifestyle for this person or this life? And so I'll give you an example of one case. We had a missing person. It was a male from the law enforcement organization where I retired from. And he was an alcoholic. And we knew that he only drank a particular type of vodka that was this dirt cheap, I mean, gut-wrenching vodka. Mm. And that was his preferred brand, and he wouldn't drink anything but that. And he was missing. Yet, when we started looking at his pattern of life, we realized that he had one credit card that was used at Quick Stops for the purchase of this type of vodka. And by getting that information through subpoena, we were able to track him as to which direction he was going and actually find him.
Oh, wow.
In a jurisdiction that was close to the last place where he had purchased a bottle of vodka. And so it was through that process of developing the pattern of life, we were able to move in a particular direction. On other cases, you take a look at the person and you start asking yourself questions. Where do they eat? How do they eat? What type of food do they eat? What does their credit card look like? What's their social media look like? Have they been on social media since they've been reported missing? If they have, whoa, we got to talk. Are they missing because they're running away from something? Or are they missing because they're running towards something? And those are all questions that the family has to answer as you're developing this. And we were joking during the break, you know, this pattern of life, but in most detective bureaus, they call it the circle of life, and some idiot starts singing the song, and everybody else throws pencils at them to get them to shut up. But it's a low-grade investigative technique that pays off almost every time because we're not an island. We don't exist on our own. Mm-hmm. There's a support mechanism around us, and you start checking with enough people in that support mechanism or getting subpoenas served or writing search warrants on different recordations, that you can get enough information to get that investigation really amped up and really going quickly.
It's going in the right direction.
Now, having said that, once it starts going in the right direction, one of the things that law enforcement's doing now is they are assigning investigators to make sure there's no confirmation bias. So as for me, here's my example. I want DeWalt 20-volt power tools. I want to replace all my power tools with DeWalt because I think they look cool. Now, someone can come to me and tell me that some other brand is better, but I have a confirmation bias. Mm-hmm. I've already decided DeWalt looks cool, and they gave me this really cool T-shirt, as a matter of fact.
That you actually are wearing.
DeWalt, yes. So I have a confirmation bias on that. And in order to make sure that that investigation is pristine from point A to point B, they'll actually bring in people that are not associated with that investigation and say, we need you to vet everything in this investigation to make sure we're not going down that happy trail of confirmation bias. And what that's doing is it's making the district attorney's job even easier because the district attorney doesn't get caught up with the last minute Perry Mason point, you know, where they bring in somebody that we don't know about and says, oh, you know, he couldn't have done it because he was in Venice that day.
Right.
This whole issue of relationships, remembering that we talked about this earlier, relationships change as time goes by. Some get stronger, some get weaker, some fall by the wayside. But every one of those people has a story to tell about your missing person. And so by the time you put all those pieces together, you've got a good profile of that missing person, and usually you have a direction to go. Our challenge with little kids, they don't have this.
They don't have the contacts.
No, they're not using credit cards yet.
Right. You know?
I was going to say they're not using telephones yet, cell phones yet, but most of them are, yeah.
But they're not. They don't have the history, and they also don't have the autonomy.
Exactly.
It isn't like little kids just went and opened a bank account and moved to a different place. That's not even possible.
Exactly.
So you know that there's always somebody involved with kids.
So that is a challenge. So here's what we do. We take that pattern of life technique and change it from the victim to the suspect. So what makes the suspect tick? Suspect says, I wasn't there. John says, he was at my house. Cool. Can we confirm that? No, he can't. Why not? Because he got gas in Palo Cedro at 8 o'clock last night.
So he couldn't have been.
He couldn't have been at John's house.
This thing where they say that like their phones all match up and all that, that doesn't happen quickly, does it? I mean, it does on TV, but.
Nothing happens quickly with phone records.
Yeah, okay. So that's not like something you could figure out, like, oh, let's look at his phone records and see if he was there. That's not an early.
We will do that.
Yeah, but that doesn't happen at the beginning, does it?
No.
Yeah, that's like later.
No, it takes a while. You're dealing with a third party. And these third parties all require some type of legal document that absolves them of any legal issues for revealing that information. Mm-hmm. So they're either going to retire.
It's great to have a lot of rights, but when we have a lot of rights, it turns into, for you guys, a lot of roadblocks.
It does, but you know, it's here's a good example. On the average homicide case, the patrol goes into a homicide case, somebody's dead, somebody's over the dead person, the suspect gets arrested. everything comes to a halt. A search warrant is written to search that house for evidence of this case. And that doesn't take long. It takes longer to find somebody to sign the search warrant than it does to write the search warrant.
Right.
But and it is an involved process. I will give the investigators credit for that. It is an involved process, but a lot of them do pre-work.
Sure.
Because one of the pages is to talk about your expertise in that particular area. So that's done ahead of time and in their computers. Then they've got to find somebody to sign a search warrant. And, of course, nighttime, it's tough trying to find people to answer their phone.
Yeah, nobody commits crimes and does all that stuff in the day between 8 and 5.
It just doesn't happen. So as we kind of wrap this thing up, I want to talk about where we're going with missing persons cases, about the how things are evolving. Technology is unbelievable. We have parents that have iWatches on their children and GPS sensors in their backpacks. Fabulous, absolutely fabulous. And that's helping a lot. A lot of the schools now have cameras, and so they're recording who goes and who comes during school hours. That's phenomenal, and that's helping a lot. So this whole technology thing has helped us as far as the missing persons investigations go. Use of canines is absolutely blowing up right now. And we have gone from two types of dogs in law enforcement. We had scent dogs, and then we had dogs that would do the work of another police officer. So they would actually apprehend the suspect, pull the suspect down on the ground.
Our favorite ones from, like, the cops shows.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Releasing the dog. No, yeah. He's biting me.
Yeah, but Aaron, I know that you were yelling, release the dog, as soon as the show came on, right?
Yeah, where's exactly. The dog?
Yeah.
Please do the dogs.
So here we are in 2023, and we're using dogs that are trained to look for teeth, to sniff out teeth for missing persons and or homicide victims, which is amazing. Our resource deployment issue has exponentially grown. It's not uncommon to see multiple agencies at a child abduction or a child missing case. And now it's really cool because now we're involving families in the investigation, where families are setting up Facebook accounts. And guess who monitors those Facebook accounts? Law enforcement.
Yeah.
Guess who they're looking for? Bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
And the family gets to do something finally. Lastly, we now have family advocates. So the poor detective that has the case, that has six other detectives asking him questions, where should we go, what should we do, now has somebody that the family can talk to that's not associated with the actual investigation but knows what's going on.
Hmm. We had a couple of – I know I only got a couple of minutes left, but recently we had a couple of cases locally that were cracked. I think one in Anderson, one in Red Bluff. What was the kicker on those? I mean, what solved them?
Technology or what was the push?
Yeah, what was – yeah.
The push was the individual investigators that had those cases sitting on their desk looking at them going, are we ready yet? Are we ready yet? Are we ready yet?
Oh, okay.
Technology's ready. I think we're ready. Can we do this? And then once they got the okay to do it, then they realized they were queued up and they were in line.
Okay.
And then once it was examined, they got the results.
Oh, cool. Yeah, because a lot of times, I mean, you wonder, you know, these crimes are committed and it's like years later
Yes. They
pull the trigger on it and it was the guy you thought it was all the time.
You know, Occam's razor.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the most obvious one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think that on the missing part, we didn't talk about the public. So, you know, we've got like 30 seconds, but the public is really important. The case in Anderson was somebody who thought something looked weird.
Yes.
I mean, that's not a camera. That's not technology. That's not DA. That's a human who looks at it and goes, hey, wait a minute. That person seems like a weirdo. What are they doing with eight kids? Like that, you can't underscore that and you can't turn that into technology. People are a good source.
Exactly. And that person who called wasn't saying, I'm calling to report an armed robbery.
No, they said something weird.
I'm calling to report something weird. And boy, did it turn out to be weird.
Yeah. All right. Got to jump off here. Thank you so much, Paul Skinner.
You're welcome.
You've been listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
love song called Who Let the